As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
You're listening to Star Wars Hangout,
the best Star Wars hangout in the galaxy. Hey Star Wars fans, welcome back to Star Wars Hangout. I'm Ez.
And I am Lottie.
And friends, we are back with The Mandalorian Season 3, Episode 3, The Convert, a full spoiler discussion. And yeah, we've actually brought on a special guest today to help us break it all down. She's a Jedi Master. The Force is strong with her. The comedy is also strong with her. Please welcome Magic by Michaela. Michaela, how are you?
Hello, I am so good. I'm so happy to be here. I'm feeling very cozy in my Grogu onesie right now. People can't see it, but it's very cozy.
She looks so great.
And you know what? I will accept the title of Jedi Master because I did just build a custom lightsaber last time I was at Disneyland. So I'm feeling a bit like Star Wars Jedi Master right now.
Yes. Yeah. No, you are. I have seen how you handle the lightsaber and the Force and your Force poses over on Instagram. The Force is strong in you, I can tell. And I am like excited to talk to you about this, this new episode and everything. So this will be cool. I'm glad you're doing well. We got Grogu costume on there, which is, I should have threw like a Grogu title in there as well, but I'm still getting used to Grogu and trying to figure out how I weave him in. And he's also still trying to, he's still growing in his Force capacity.
Oh, yeah.
So he's a cutie pie. And we love him and everyone loves him. And if you don't, you shouldn't be listening to this and we got problems. Okay. So we do want to get to know Michaela though, before we dive into all this conversation. We might even sneak in like a 5-minute Rebels conversation because why not? I think I could be wrong, but when we had Michaela on for Shell Cottage Radio, did we ever mention, or maybe it was like after we were done recording, did we ever talk about Rebels at all? Did we ever say anything?
I don't think we did.
Did we tell her? I think I told Michaela that I was trying to get you to finish it because that was like months ago when we did that or whatever. So yeah, our goal was to get her through Rebels. So we'll talk about that here in a second because it's one of her shows. But let's get to know Michaela a little bit here. Let's start with some of your favorite characters. Let's go with your favorite Star Wars character. Yeah, if you have to pick one, just one.
Okay. If I have to pick one, it has to be Ahsoka. Predictably, because Clone Wars is one of my very favorite shows. I think besides just her whole story being very inspiring and her whole character being very inspiring, I think it's hard not to love Ahsoka because she's one of those characters where you get to see from childhood all the way to adulthood and existing through the different iterations of Star Wars, the prequels, mm-hmm. the shows, the sequels, everything. So it's hard not to love her when you sort of see in her whole life's journey.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. Her arc is fantastic. And, you know, I have to admit something that like when I was, when I was younger and Ahsoka first came out, those first couple episodes, and I have literally in passing met Ashley Eckstein and said hi, and it was amazing. Oh. She's so wonderful and nice. But I remember when she first came out, I was like, what is going on? I didn't understand how Anakin could have this Padawan, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. I was young. I didn't understand how awesome this character was. And I only thought that for a split second, just to be clear. And then afterwards, because literally once you get into the series, I loved Ahsoka as well. And she is now one of my all-time favorites. And I just think she's the future of Star Wars. So, like, as well with Grogu and everything else that they have, we have going on here, I feel like Ahsoka is the future. She's awesome. There's so much they can do with her. So great, great pick. Have you ever, there's a, what is Ashley Eckstein's clothing line is like her universe. Have you ever
her universe?
Yeah. It's got some really cool stuff. I've been wanting to get Lottie some stuff for like from that. She's got the classic Ahsoka, the shirt, like the long sleeve kind of shirt thing. It just looks really cool. And I'm just, you know, thinking if anybody doesn't have it, they need to go get it. Cause her store is really cool. She has really good merchandise. Well, you should look it up, sweetie.
Okay. Yeah. I'm on it.
Sorry. Yeah. I'll just pick out something, put it in the cart. We'll get it.
Cute clothes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Okay. So moving on now. So we get Star Wars character, Ahsoka. Great. Favorite Star Wars movie. What do you think?
That has to be Rogue One.
Okay.
Rogue One, I think, is just a masterclass in how to tell a story that pays tribute to the original while still building on it and still having original characters. It completely sort of changes the way you see the story that leads up to A New Hope. Mm. And it's just one of those stories that just is really strong with its themes and its message, just about how, you know, a small group of people can completely change the course of the war. So it is just one of the most well done pieces of storytelling, in my opinion.
Oh yeah. No, 100%. I think when Rogue One came out, it just shocked everybody. It was, there was just a lot of buzz. I mean, we loved those characters so much. And then we grow to love them in one movie and they take them away. And I was like, what? I mean, just Chirrut is awesome. Jen. And then I'm wearing Cassian Andor's sort of like inspired jacket. So I feel good about that. I'm glad you, yeah. Rogue One is awesome. Now, let me actually jump around here in terms of questions, because I wonder, so with Rogue One being your favorite, how did you first get into Star Wars? Like, when did you first start watching, or what brought you into the Star Wars universe, I guess?
Yeah, so the second movie I actually saw in theaters was Revenge of the Sith. The first movie I ever saw in theaters was Return of the King. But that didn't get me into Star Wars, because I had no context for what I was seeing. My parents were like, oh, this is the third prequel. And I'm like, okay, so what comes before it? And they're like, yeah, so this is the third one. And then before that is 4, 5, 6, but those come after chronologically. I'm just like, what are you talking about?
Right.
This doesn't make any sense. So that didn't get me into Star Wars, but it wasn't until a few years later when I watched, I think it was Return of the Jedi on TV. And I honestly still had no context, because I hadn't seen the other movies. I'm watching the third movie in every group of movies. But there was just something about the world building, and, you know, just seeing them fight with the lightsabers, and just something about the universe that made me fall in love with it. And then I went back and I watched all the rest of them, and I have loved it since then.
So, you know, okay, Mikhail, you just keep growing on me, because Return of the Jedi is like my favorite movie, and it's the one that, like, I really locked in and fell in love with. But my first watching of Star Wars was just Empire, and then I went into, I didn't really even understand exactly what was going on. Like you said, sometimes you're too young, or you don't really get it. And then I watched that the final movie when Luke faces down Emperor Palpatine. He looks at him, and he looks at his hand, and he looks back at him, and he's just like, no, like, you know, you failed, Your Highness. I'm a Jedi like my father before me. And it's just sick. And I'm like, let's go, Luke. And it's just, it's so awesome. And it just gets you so hyped and pumped. So that's cool. That's cool. Return of the Jedi. Awesome.
It's such a great ending, because it's so, I guess you could say, subversive. He doesn't defeat the enemy in the traditional way that you expect the hero to, which is, you know, he doesn't strike him down with his lightsaber and defeat him. He sort of, you know, succeeds by saying, I'm not going to fight you, which is very unique. And I think that was one of the first stories that sort of, had that.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's just, I mean, I don't know, like the original trilogy really is magic. I mean, when I grew up with the prequels, so I really enjoyed the prequels as well too. So I don't really get any of that old prequel hate stuff or whatever. And I think the sequels are beautiful, and Rey's story is awesome. But I mean, I'm also kind of a fanboy and just love all Star Wars. So I don't know. You know. Okay, let's keep going here. What else we got? Oh, any favorite? Let's first do, like, do you read Star Wars books by chance? Do you ever get around and bounce into like comic books or any short stories by chance?
I have read some Star Wars books. I will say my favorite Star Wars book is the Ahsoka novel, of course, because she's my favorite character. So I'm a little bit sad that Tales of the Jedi sort of decanonized that storyline. But I just really love sort of getting to see her in that time period right after the Purge, sort of see her journey to becoming a Jedi. I would love to see the Ahsoka novel made into like an animated movie or something like that.
Yeah, for sure. And I wonder if they aren't going to do something more with that. We've got the Ahsoka series and they're talking about, you know, different things coming out of there. So I will be really intrigued to see really what they do, because some of the spoilers and rumors, and so we'll just go ahead and say potential spoiler here, is that they might be going backwards. It's not necessarily just going to be stuff that there could be flashbacks, is I guess what I should say. So who knows what that's gonna, you know, cover or whatever, but it's exciting. So okay, one more. Oh, favorite Star Wars TV show. And this could be live action, this could also be the animated series, whatever you're thinking. What are you feeling for that?
Okay, until The Mandalorian came out, my favorite TV show was The Clone Wars. I just really loved how The Clone Wars sort of built on the places that the prequels were lacking story-wise or character-wise. And when you go back and watch the prequels, having seen The Clone Wars, it's different. It's a different experience because, you know, you have more of an emotional attachment to some of these side characters or even main characters that you grew to know more in the series. Of course, now The Mandalorian is my favorite TV show. It's just, yeah, it's really hard to beat The Mandalorian in terms of how The Mandalorian has really paid tribute to the original trilogy and just the storyline and the characters. It's very hard to beat what they've done with that.
Yeah, I that's a really good point. It's like all the different deep cuts that they do, you know, like just some of the camera motions, some of the background characters or the lines, like the dialogue and stuff. It's slipping right back into the trilogy. It's a good blend of old and new, and it just feels really fresh and exciting with good storytelling, good pacing and all that sort of stuff. So I'm with you on that. The Mandalorian is, it's good. If we can, before we move on, I personally, if it's okay to step aside for 5 minutes and talk about another favorite TV show, because Michaela, you know, it ties in strongly to The Mandalorian. I mean, Dave Filoni creating it, working here, working in Ahsoka, Star Wars Rebels is fantastic. So Michaela, you've seen it, right?
Yeah.
Seen it and loved it. Lottie also has seen it.
I just finished it. Yeah.
Just finished it. Cried.
Yes.
Loved it. If you are listening to us right now and you haven't seen that, I'm just going to go ahead and say spoilers. I know it's been out for like years, but there is a big, big thing we're going to drop right here that is like, if you ever wanted to watch that and not have the awesomeness of it spoiled, just step away for a second. With the end of that, like season four. So Michaela, okay, sorry. So many things. Like the end of it is the whole bit with Kanan, with Ezra, with the epilogue, Thrawn. It's all coming together. It is all coming together in The Mandalorian.
Ahsoka.
I mean, it's everything that we've ever wanted. So I guess quickly, as we think about Mandalorian and we think about Rebels, did you catch the Purgle connection in episode one?
Oh, yes. I was so excited when I saw those. I was like, the space whales.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. It's so crazy. So I mean, any thought? I mean, clearly Ezra's out there. And oh, do you think, I have to ask, do you think there's something, and I know that there doesn't always have to be romance, and there doesn't always have to be things between different characters or whatever, but I love Sabine and Ezra, and I don't know, but I have a feeling that like Sabine really cares for Ezra, and she stayed on Lothal for like that entire time trying to figure out what he wanted. She's going to go get him. She's going to go bring him home. How do you feel about those two and their like relationship or not relationship? What are you feeling?
It's so funny because I usually have very strong feelings one way or the other. If I feel like I would like to see these characters romantically involved, or I feel like there's something there or not. With Sabine and Ezra, I continuously flip-flop back and forth. Like, there's no, it's like a sibling dynamic. That's weird if they date. And then I'm like, no, this is clearly love. This is romance. So whatever happens with them, I'll be happy because I clearly have no strong feelings either way, but I do really enjoy their deep connection. And I think that's one of the biggest strengths of Star Wars Rebels in general, is just the sort of found family aspect and the deep connection and friendship and love that all the characters share.
Yeah.
Their paths are clearly intertwined. And I mean, the guardian of the world between worlds, though, you know, comes and picks up Sabine to get Ezra. So there must be a deeper connection in one way or the other.
to hear my sweetheart say the guardian of the world between worlds does all sorts of things. I feel accomplished as a Jedi master. I feel like I've trained you in the ways, and it's just so good because we talk about this. Like, I'm like walking around, I've been wanting to talk to somebody about my theories and thoughts and where it's all going to go, and I'm just super pumped that is, we're getting it. I think they're going to do it. They've shot the Ahsoka series. They had the Purrgil connection. And when we get into this episode, I'm going to drop some major ideas that I think will tie into Rebels. But let's move on. I have taken too much time. Just sorry, that was personal. I had to get a Rebels conversation there quickly. So
I love Rebels. I'm happy.
Yes. Good. Okay. So just around the horn here, we're going to start with Michaela, and then we'll go to Lottie, and then I'll give you guys my thoughts on it. But just your initial thoughts on this episode 3. How did you feel after watching this? I think it's the longest one that we've had. It's the longest episode this season. So, yeah. How did you feel, Michaela?
I was initially very thrown off by how we sort of went from Din and Bo-Katan and then to this entire subplot. And then by the end of it, I was like, this is genius. I love this. This is so great. I feel like one of the things that The Mandalorian does very well is the same thing that the Clone Wars does for the prequels. I feel like the sequels, they never really fully sort of addressed how we got to this place where we have the First Order. What happened to the New Republic? How did that, you know, what happened? And The Mandalorian, I think, is doing a really, really excellent job of filling in those story gaps and sort of showing how we got from the New Republic to the First Order. And also just, I feel like they very cleverly say things, you know, about the political system, about the way people in the Outer Rim are treated. And it's very, very good storytelling. So I was very happy with that sort of subplot we saw, and I'm excited to see where it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Okay. All right, Lottie, how did you feel?
I think you put it into very, very good words, and I feel the same because I just read an article, like really briefly, went on, I think, Screen Rant, and they talked a little bit about like how, I don't know, the fandom is split, or this was kind of hard to put together. But then I just really kind of like read a little bit of it, and I turned to Ez and I was like, actually, I really enjoyed it. And I think same happened when you said, whoa, this was quick, like a quick going from their story over here and then staying there for so long. But at the end, I loved the scenery. I loved seeing more of Coruscant and just them. Like, I don't know, like the whole time, sometimes we said, oh, this is so cheesy. It's so cheesy. I don't know, when they're at that festival or whatever and just doing their thing. But sometimes I love a little bit of cheesy, you know, I love watching like K-dramas and stuff. And I mean, that's 100% always like very cheesy acting, but I love it. And you, the whole time you already get that feeling something is wrong though. Like this is too good and awesome. And the way she looks and, you know, looks at him and yeah. And then now we have this whole cliffhanger, like why in the end does she, we kind of knew something was wrong, but why does she completely like wipe out his memory and everything?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I really enjoyed both plots, like seeing both in one episode. And I was surprised that we at the end even still get, because the episode was so long, that we still get a little bit of Mando and all that.
Oh yeah, and Bo-Katan and the whole going to see the armor and stuff. Yes.
That was cool that they are now in this place. So really well, like, you know.
I thought they were, I didn't think that, so I forgot how long the episode was because I'm like, they went back. I forgot that they were going, I thought it was going to end and it was going to like, okay, directed by and everything, and we're going to be left on Coruscant there because it was a pretty good spot to do it. And they're like, nope, we're going to take you back over here and we're actually going to show you Bo-Katan coming in. So for me, just quickly, I just want to say I'm loving it. 100%, but just absolutely freaking loving it. And I've heard people say, talk about the pace and different things, whatever, this and that. It was, as Michaela said, it's very necessary. They're doing a really good job about explaining stuff as they go. And sometimes they explain to Grogu, which was really neat. Did you see in like when they're going to Mandalore, he's pointing out the different, Concordia and the different like places, the moons and stuff, the system of Mandalore, and explaining how things work. And I was like, yeah, that's awesome. And it actually, depending on the age group that's coming in, they need a little bit of an explanation and they want some context and you want to understand what's going on. So Michaela said that was something that was a little bit lacking as we the build in, the lead in to the sequels, and they're definitely correcting that and making sure that we know where things are going. So I feel really good about both of these plots that we got, because I felt like this core piece here was necessary. We had no idea what was going on in the New Republic. We didn't really know what they were doing with the Empire at large and all that stuff. So yeah, it was really good. So let me just jump right to something that's probably going to throw Michaela off, and she's going to be like, wait, what the heck? Is there a blossoming? And I feel like I already said this with Ezra and Sabine, but I mean, what is going on between Din and Bo-Katan? Like, they're out there and they're fighters. They're fighting. I feel like they're getting closer, and they're good friends. Let's just say that they seem to be good friends. They are fighting for each other. She goes and like protects him. Do you think that the way, or do you think Din is having a good impression on her? Or do you think, how do you think, I guess, let me frame it this way. How do you think Bo-Katan feels about Din? That's a better way to put it.
That's a good question. So I,
any way you want with it.
I mean, I was not getting any impression. There was one point where I was like, hold on, are they trying to do something here between those two characters? It was a passing thought, but I don't believe that, and I don't want them to. I think the dynamic works very well with Din being a single dad and Bo-Katan being the cool aunt. But what I really like about their dynamic is that it's really fun and interesting to kind of see how almost unsettled Bo-Katan is by how sort of earnest and genuine and compassionate Din is. And I feel like that's just something she's not used to, especially maybe not coming from other Mandalorians or just people who she's interacted with in her life in general. And just when she sort of sees that genuine compassion from him, it kind of like unsettles her a bit. She's like, whoa, wait, I'm not used to this. And that's something I really like about that dynamic.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think I tried to bring that up in the last episode. I was talking a lot about this when Bo-Katan mentions her father and he died defending Mandalore. And he was like, this is the way. I got chills. I was like, oh, he just turned and like honored and respected her father. And she was like, huh?
Yeah.
You know, and it was like the way in which she uses this is, or he uses this is the way versus she did. And it's like, yeah, she kind of grew up in that system. And it's like, it's the old fashioned way. And it's sort of like, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But they really, I don't know, it seems to be kind of rubbing off on her. And I think you're right in terms of her sincerity, right? I mean, just the way how sincere he is, I should say.
And she probably had stereotypes, like heard stories about, you know, the old ways and how the people are. And now she's met him and someone you think we clearly get the message. He didn't grow up with the typical Mandalorian stuff on Mandalore, right? Like the, what was it? Like a type of food?
Pog.
Some kind of.
It was the egg pog drink thing.
I don't know. And she was like, what? How do you not know it? You're a Mandalorian.
Right.
But then, yeah, like you said, there's more to it. And she, it's so cool to see how she learns about it. And now she is, I mean, kind of involuntarily part of their cult. Yeah, I think she that really gets her thinking, and I think that's a really cool connection that we get there, that we can kind of feel how it is to be somewhere new, somewhere we only heard stories of, and that's what shaped our picture of them, and now we get to experience them firsthand and get to know them, and it's night and day difference, or you know, like at least different than she thought.
Yeah, I feel like they're saying something. I really like sort of the what they're conveying about sort of, you know, people being from almost like a home country, and then you have this sort of diaspora, and it almost, I feel like there's some real life themes that could parallel to with, you know, people who are living in a diaspora. And like you said, it's really fun to compare then and first initial meeting versus now when they first met and she was like, oh my God, he's in a cult. Like, and now seeing sort of her reaction to his sect and her sort of receiving that and realizing like, wow, these Mandalorians are living together. They're coexisting. They're, you know, that's she and she's been alone, you know, and the way she reacts to that is really interesting to see.
Yeah. You just summed that up really well. Cause I think that is something I was trying to figure out, like what's going on, but she's been left because of this, you know, like she didn't bring back the Darksaber. And so the fleet that she acquired, all that kind of stuff, it's sort of gone and she's not their leader. It just, where does she belong? How does she bring her people together? She's been looking for that very thing, which is the idea that there's a community, and they're actually even going out and getting and recruiting or finding, you know, these foundlings, and they're bringing them in to the way, and they're sticking together, and it feels just more, I don't know, yeah, connected, and it's honoring, it's sort of what she wants. I mean, she wants her people to come back together and stop the fighting, and these people are all getting around this idea of the ancient way of Mandalore. And whether you like it or not, that seems to be something that she's like, okay, that's working, and other things aren't, you know, I mean, maybe that's something that yeah, she'll think about. Yes.
I have a question for Michaela. Oh, let's go. Would you, if you thought, well, this is awesome, the way they believe, the way they live, that's great, but you could never ever take your helmet off in front of other people, would you still join their cult?
That is a great question. I don't think, you know, I don't think I could do it. I think I like eating with other people too much. Yes. How am I supposed to go have a meal with my friends if I can't take my helmet off?
Yeah.
That's the Hobbit trait in me that I will give up to become a Mandalorian.
Good answer.
Yeah, I think it'd be tough. It's just sort of like, and that's what I think Bo-Katan makes a joke about that, like, just with the whole helmet situation. Or maybe he said, you know, you might want to keep your helmet on when we go down there. And we were kind of talking like, is this, I mean, they can take it off. They like just not in front of other people, and they can do it privately and whatever, you know. But yeah, it's.
I kind of feel, I really hope they give a little bit of a deeper explanation why, what that means to them, why they are so rigorous about this. You know.
Oh yeah, and I feel like we're getting bits and pieces here and there of why they do what they do and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, we shall see. And that's good. Okay, we kind of went back and forth. We kind of hit the end and in the beginning a little bit, just talking. We'll come back to the end as we get through the Dr. Pershing stuff. And I do want to mention, Michaela, you said they were explaining stuff along the way. There was a cool little line where they talk about the difference between fighting TIE fighters and TIE interceptors. And like, I mean, it's very simple, and it's maybe just obvious, but they're like, oh, these TIE interceptors are harder than the TIE fighters. And it's just to help the general audience understand what's the difference between these two things. Is it just style, the way they look? And it was just kind of funny because they're doing little things like that just to say, this is a difference between this, and they're getting the terminology built back up again. Which is
And I mean, kind of what you said earlier, I feel like that's one of the biggest strengths of The Mandalorian, is that it's very accessible to both new fans or people who, you know, aren't as well versed in Star Wars, as well as people who are huge Star Wars fans. Because if you're a huge Star Wars fan, you know, and you're seeing all the Easter eggs and you know the characters' backstories and everything, that's a great experience. But then, you know, if you're a new fan who's not as well versed in Star Wars, it's still a really great experience to watch, just because of how the story is formulated. Din doesn't know anything about anything either. He's like, oh, these are enemy sorcerers with laser swords. You know what I mean? You're seeing it through his eyes. If you're a new fan watching, you're sort of going on the journey, learning about these places and these things along with him. So that is still a really great way to watch the show. And I feel like that's something that The Force Awakens did. Sorry, this is a tangent. Oh, but great. I feel like this is something The Force Awakens also did really well, was make it very accessible to new fans and also paid a lot of tribute for old fans. Because if you're new, you're seeing it through Rey's eyes. She doesn't know anything either. You're learning it along with her. And if you're old, you can also watch it, you know, maybe through Han's eyes or Leia, and you can kind of see the story unfold in the context of the greater picture. So anyway, I just, yeah, had to build on what you said, because I feel like that's one of the reasons The Mandalorian is so successful, is that really anyone can watch it.
Yeah, Michaela, never shy away from making a Force Awakens connection. That is awesome. I just love how interconnected it is. And that's a really good point that you want to bring people in, because some people, I have a good friend of mine who runs a podcast and has been on different like Star Wars trivia shows, and she's a Star Wars trivia champion. She's from Chicago. Hoping to have her on the show at some point, but she got into Star Wars. Her first sort of like viewing of it was Star Wars Rebels, this like cartoon, and just got into it and was like, this is cool. What, like, there's a whole, what, okay, where, how do these characters fit in? Maybe she had some context of like, she knew about Star Wars, right? But that was your window in. This is your gateway into Star Wars. So for some people, The Mandalorian, this is going to be their gateway in, and you need to explain things along the way and have a, yeah, just a way in which we learn through Grogu, or we learn through Din, like you said, and he's you know, just trying to, he's getting caught up here in terms of what it means to be a Mandalorian. We all kind of are, actually, which is great. So all right, let's dive into Coruscant. Let's just go to Coruscant and go crazy. It looks like Coruscant, it felt like Coruscant. Am I wrong that we went to the, I made this joke with Lottie earlier. I was like, Michaela's gonna come on here and say, like, Ez, did you see the Galactic Opera House situation thing? Is that the same place? And I was like, honestly, I didn't know. And I was getting a little, like, you know, nervous. I'm like, oh my God. But because I was like, what's the name of that place? And it's literally just like the Galaxy Opera House or whatever. It's just literally all that it's called. But it's the spot where Dr. Pershing is like talking, and he's talking about, you know, rehabilitation and all that goodness. What did it feel like, Michaela, to be back on Coruscant?
Yeah, that was really cool. And I feel like the contrast, having been mostly in the Outer Rim for the entirety of this TV show, and then going straight into Coruscant like that and seeing, you know, the more modernity, is that the word? And just, you know, this sort of different class of people. It kind of was an interesting experience, because it really forces you to be in Pershing's shoes. Like, you sort of, going from that setting in the Outer Rim, jumping straight into Coruscant for the first time in the show, you sort of feel that disconnect, like, oh, wow, wait, this is completely different. This feels a little foreign, even though, you know, we as viewers are familiar with the location, just in the context of the show, it felt completely new and different. And I think that was a really cool viewing experience.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we get to see the New Republic. We get to see how it's changed. But yet, there was an interesting character who was talking to Dr. Pershing as he came out, and he said sort of, he mentioned the New Republic, and he was sort of like, yeah, different drapes. It's all the same. I mean, he's sort of like, Coruscant has remained through, you know, the Republic, the Galactic Empire, the New Republic, whatever. It looks the same, and it's sort of just a city that's just moving on. And yes, there's different people who come in and rule, and different factions, the Jedi, they came and they went and so on. So yeah, it was neat to see a lot of things that were similar, but yet then this is new for this show, and you're taking us back there, and we're establishing, because that's something the sequels never did. I actually kind of wish we would have gotten a little bit of Coruscant in the sequels to see what was really going on there, because it's a center point where we're used to being, I guess, in the prequels. Now it's, you know, it's not really there in the original trilogy, but anyways, it was really cool to see it, and I felt really I'm very intrigued about the New Republic and what's going on. Like, what is their agenda? What's really happening on the bigger stage? Like, is the Empire completely destroyed? There's these remnants, right? They're bringing them in. They're destroying old technology and stuff. So I felt like it was, it's really good for us to go in there and get that context. But Lottie, what did you think? So Lottie has seen episodes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6.
Yeah.
We haven't really gotten the sequels yet. She's seen the sequels way back in the day, I think, one viewing. But we got to get through those again. So what was it like, I guess, to see? Because we recently saw Coruscant in Andor, and you were seeing a lot of connections there, right?
I was going to say, like the best I got to know Coruscant was through Andor.
Yeah.
And we didn't even get to see that much of the city. So I guess I remember Andor the most, and then right before Order 66 happens, right, when everything with Obi-Wan and Anakin goes down in Coruscant. So
yeah.
But I just love the city, even though, so I grew up in a big city in Berlin City, which is, you know, not like a mega city with all these skyscrapers, but still a big city with lots of people, lots of, you know, shopping malls, bars, you name it, you know, political buildings and stuff. And now we are more in a countryside, and I really, really enjoy being out of a city, outside of the city now. But there is something about a big city that just, I don't know, has my heart still, even though I don't want to live there anymore. But I love
your city girl.
I mean, I technically am. I love like the theaters, the bars, that robot. Oh my gosh, I said robot. I mean droid. I'm so sorry. I made a huge newbie mistake.
Whoa.
The droid that drove the taxi.
Yeah.
Where Dr. Pershing was in, he was like talking about all the sites and you should go there and you should go see the gardens or whatever. And I was like, this is so cool. I feel like. It to me, even though it might not be the same thing, but it, to me, it had some mixed city vibes. Like there was a little bit of Tokyo in there. There was a little bit of like more like an American style city in there. And I just love the hustle and bustle of the city and all the different people and all their stories in such a small space is just so interesting. And yeah, I loved the city dynamics and even like seeing the public transport and then like sneaking down there and it's so cool.
Yeah. I think one of, and so one of the moment when Elia Kane is the individual who sneaks Dr. Pershing out, right? They go on like the look like a subway thing, and it was like he was sort of new to all of this. They're going out to the junkyards, and Lottie was just sort of like, that is so beautiful. And it just and she was talking about how like Tokyo, Berlin, and just being on public transportation, which we don't have over here, Michaela. Sorry. I mean, in my town, you probably do. Like over here, I'm in Ohio, and it's not great.
Same where I am. Not great.
Other cities do it really well, and so does Coruscant. Coruscant clearly does it well. But anyway, it was really beautiful. It was just really, really neat and everything. So yeah, the going back there has been really cool because, like Michaela said, we've been out to the we've been in the Outer Rim. If you look at all the different episodes where Mando goes, he goes to these remote locations sometimes, or where they're out mining and they're just doing just lots of different things. And it's just he's just out there. And so now to come into a core world, I mean, he's not there, right? But we're there with Dr. Pershing. It was really a neat insight because we just saw him. He still has the burn on his ear where they were hijacking the the shuttle and everything from the end of season two. So. It was crazy. So now, Michaela, let's get to this. What do you think? Let's get a couple big questions out of the way. Elia Kane, who is there, we saw her on Moff Gideon's ship, I think, right? And she is, and I forget what this whole thing is, this program where they're kind of they're getting housing and they have to go through rehabilitation and different things, and then boom, they're able to come in and help out with the New Republic.
Amnesty.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Coriant.
Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Amnesty.
Okay. And so anyways, they're in, she's there already. How do you feel? How do you feel about her, by the way? How do you feel? I mean, did you trust her to begin with? Were you trusting? Did you think she had turned or what?
I think they did a really good job of making you want to think that she had changed and sort of, you know, making you feel like, oh, well, I can trust her. Okay. But still leaving this almost atmosphere of something's just a little off though. Something's just a little not right here. So there's always something in the back of your mind when you're watching that episode, like this isn't going to go the way we think. So I feel like they did a really good job of creating that atmosphere, but I did want to believe. I was, you know, it's nice. They lure you in. Oh, they're just going to this little street fair and they're having fun. And she got him cookies. Like, I think that was a really well done of sort of making you want to believe and then pulling that at the last minute. You know, I'm interested to hear your theories of where you think they're going with this, because I feel like Jon Favreau continually always surprises me. But I mean, I imagine what she's doing is, you know, sort of erasing the memories of these important people who can, you know, he can do the cloning experiment experiments and erasing the memories of these people so she can recruit them back to continue with, you know. What I wouldn't be surprised if she's actually secretly working with Gideon, who I don't remember if they mentioned exactly where he is or if they were just
They didn't really say. I mean, it was at the end of season two, they talked about the mind flare and how like they might hook, you know, Gideon up to that, and he looked kind of like, oh my gosh, scared, you know, because we can see it can erase your memories and everything. So we don't really know what happened. Actually, when I saw the title of this, I thought, did they give, like, I thought Gideon came in and gave up secrets and they're sort of like, all right, pat him on the back, he's one of us now, like he's turned, and that, and I would be like, I don't trust him. But it's the communication officer who I am. You want to know my theory? You want to know what I would like? Okay, so I actually think this is all way bigger than the Moff Gideon. I mean, I think it's like I think this all brewing down. I think from the shadow, they showed us in season two that Ahsoka has been hunting Thrawn. And that Thrawn, that means Thrawn has been out moving about. And I think Thrawn is the dangerous name that they don't, you know, so like these guys are ridiculously crazy. When Bo-Katan takes over the ship and they contact Gideon, he's like, you know what to do. And he like offs the two guys, bites down on the thing, and he offs himself. So that way they can't get information. They can't get to Moff Gideon. Pershing knows how crazy this is. So either Gideon is just, he's a great villain and just wildly, I don't know, he's got his group, but I just feel like there's somebody else either opposed to him that's coming down the line, or that literally there's somebody behind him that no one has ever even heard of. And he's just amassing this force and stuff is happening. That is my crazy tinfoil Star Wars hat idea. I think he's got people really well connected, and Thrawn is a mastermind. Thrawn is the type of person who could pull off some really crazy something. Yeah, I don't know. What do you think? Am I nuts? Am I crazy?
No, I think you're 100% right. And now I'm like, why did I not think of that? Like, I was here playing like regular chess. Like, okay, she's working with Gideon. This, you're playing like 4D chess. You're like, hey, this is, and you're so right. And this is what I meant by Jon Favreau continually always surprises me, and that's exactly how he would have surprised me, is being like, oh no, it's you think it's Gideon, but it's bigger than that. It's Thrawn. You're 100%. Right. That's not crazy at all. That is 100% what's happening.
I feel so validated, Mikhail. Because I have in a way, I've been talking a lot about the idea that in Rebel going this way, who knows? But you build to the next emperor. You build to the next idea of someone massive who could unite the Imperial remnant, and the where Thrawn comes from is the series, is like the trilogy that he originally in 1992. I know you youngsters here don't know what that year. All right, I was there. Okay, and let me tell you, I didn't read it too much later, but it is heir to the Empire. That is literally what Thrawn shows up in. He is like the heir, sort of. I mean, he's actually looking for. You've got Luke and the whole idea of Luke coming in and being and whatever, but like he's heir to the Empire, and it's just this crazy idea that he's gonna bring everybody together. He's this mastermind, and it's just like, okay, they're actually doing some sort of component to that, because in Bad Batch, if you saw, I know you haven't seen, you're not all the way caught up on it, Michaela, but in season one, at the end of season one, they go to a little place called Mount Tantus. And that has been a crazy, just so that's the only thing I'll say, and I'm not going to say anything else. It's a place where there's secrets. There are Imperial secrets, and Thrawn knows about those secrets and will use them and exploit them. So I just feel like from the shadows, if you ever search Thrawn online and you go look at pictures of him, he's always like back in shadow. He's just like back in the shadows, watching, doing his thing. And I just feel like he's propped up some people and distantly has connections to Gideon, and Gideon would have respect for him knowing that he was a Grand Admiral. What they do really well in the Legend series is when a Grand Admiral steps on scene, you're sort of like, oh, blippity bloppity blip. You're like, this guy's a bad move. He's like, watch out. And the Grand Admirals were like, they carried so much weight in the Empire. There were 12 or 14, I don't know, but there was only a select number of them, and they were a big freaking deal. And he is the last, I believe, Grand Admiral. And so I'm just sort of like, they got to be building to that guy, because this Aliyah Kate, she's kidnapped. But here's my question, Mikhail. What I don't know is, so the mind flare is, she uses this on him, and you said maybe to recruit him back, because did we not all believe that he really was wanting to do what was right? How did you feel about, like, he wanted to work for the New Republic? It felt like Dr. Pershing actually believed what he was saying, and that might have been a no-no. We don't want this going to the New Republic. What do you think?
I mean, that's how I interpreted it, but now I'm like, man, I'm sure there's more that I'm not seeing there. You know, I'm very easily, I don't know what the I'm very easily fooled by the narrative, right? Even during the Mandalorian season two, that whole sequence with Luke coming in at the end, even after I saw the gloved hand, even after I saw his lightsaber color and everything, up until the point where he pulled off his hood, I didn't think it was going to be Luke. After all those context clues, yeah. I was like, oh, no, it's maybe, who is it? It's going to be like Cal Kestis or something.
Right.
I'm very easily fooled by the narrative. So yeah. When I see these things and I'm like, this is probably building towards something, but I could not tell you what. So I am very intrigued hearing your theories and everything you're saying. And I'm like, oh, man, like, how did I not see that? How did I not see that coming? Like,
yeah.
Especially knowing what we know, what people have been saying about the Mandalorian and the Ahsoka show, and how Favreau's like, you know, he's already written season four of the Mandalorian and it ties into the Ahsoka show. And my mind wasn't even on Thrawn, even knowing that the Ahsoka show will be around that conflict and that he's tying in those stories together. So yeah. I'm interested to hear what you're thinking about Pershing and the Mind Flayer and stuff.
Let me just tell you, all right? Because I tell you, I'm having so much fun. Because this has been one of the most intriguing episodes, because I'm like, what is she doing? She's a communication officer. Why? So she clearly had to go in there. They knew Dr. Pershing was taken. They all were taken. She's committed to some greater cause. And I feel like, yeah, so she's definitely fried him. I think it's just so he's not used by them, and then she's taken I'm still confused because I thought he's a great asset. Why not just why can't you take him and move him, get that lab and get back out to Thrawn, get in your people and do your thing and force him to do what you want him to do. You know, he seems to clearly want to be back into his stuff. But what she was gauging is how much did the research mean to him? And she gets him in a vulnerable position where she can take him out. She's almost like an assassin. She's almost like sitting in there looking for important people that could come in and drop names like Gideon or Thrawn or whoever else and take them out. She is like a sleeper agent in there looking for these people, and she is dedicated to the cause. So I think that's just what she did. Maybe she did that with a few other people. My long theory here is we got ourselves a little guy who can do some force healing. And that old mind of, I think something is going to come down. They're going to bring Dr. Pershing back. They're going to realize his importance. And somehow we're going to get, he's going to get healed. Cause I think he's gone. I think he's going to come out of that like loopy a little bit. What was it? Is in Andor. Did you get a chance to watch Andor, Michaela? Some of it here and there.
I'm only like halfway through Andor. I'm still catching up, but okay. I love Andor.
Yeah, it's wonderful, and I don't want to spoil anything. There's one part, and it's not major spoiler, but it's a they use sort of like the interrogation equipment, and when you use it, it's bad. Like the person ends up I don't even know. They can't talk. They're really out of it. They've lost everything, lost their mind and their life. So I'm worried that Dr. Pershing is going to be real. She cranked that machine. She cranked it to completely take him out. So I don't think his story is over because he referenced because he spoke out loud before a large group of people about his research. People seemed interested in his research in him. It was just he's going through this whole process. Someone is going to say, we need that Kamino technology. We need that stuff. And let's bring him back. I don't know when that's going to happen, but it will. There will come a time because to me, I'm just imagining for the cloning to continue to go into the sequels, they have to have some sort of cloning project or facility that they're still possibly working on to tie in. I don't know what other projects might be, but I just feel like his story is not over and he's going to go on ice for a while. We're going to go back to the Mandalorians and we're going to do our thing. But that was a tie into something way, way, way bigger than it's their over. Like you said, John and Dave are working on this and you don't drop Thrawn's name in the Mandalorian series and not have him be like a big freaking deal at some point. So I don't know. I want to hear folks' thoughts and theories. So people are out there listening right now. Like if you guys have thoughts on what could be happening with Dr. Pershing going forward, and this Eliah Kane, who stays in good standing with the Republic, that showed me she is locked in there and she is waiting for the next person to come in who could divulge secrets and off them. So she's dangerous. I mean, she's a great. By the way, the actress is great. I forget her name. She is wonderful. Do you have her name pulled up?
I just had it.
Okay. Because she is so good because I couldn't tell. Her smile is like, you're like, oh, you seem so nice, but are you? I don't know what's going on. It was, she was trippy. So anyway, really good. So, did you notice, Michaela, the reference to when he was going under and you had another doctor there, put him in the mind flare? And what did he say? Something about it's a trap.
Trap, yeah.
I can't remember how he delivered it, but all I remember it was like it's a trap. Saw him, and I was like, oh my god, it's a calamari. He says it's a trap, and it was funny. So there they go.
Yeah, I love those little Easter eggs.
Yeah, what was her name?
Katie O'Brien.
Okay,
sorry.
Yeah, did a fantastic job, and I thought because she had me, I was like, wait a second, she's either I don't know. And then I couldn't really tell. I'm like, maybe if she tells him the truth, like, hey, there's still a greater faction out there. Would you be willing to work for us? I feel like the secret that she's hiding and keeping is so important that it doesn't matter whether he would want to come back. He's such an important figure that she's in there to assess whether he is loyal to the New Republic. How does he feel about the Empire? And she just offs him. So it's just like, big deal.
Did you see her face or some muscles in her face twitch when she was like promptly cranking that up? Yeah. And like almost like she was almost mad at him and like, you know, gets like his punishment for something, or I don't know. It was weird.
Yeah, it was strange. I don't really know what to make of the whole thing. So, it was overall, Michaela. I mean, it was cool, right? It was cool to say that he was in the mind flare. Do you like Dr. Pershing? I mean, he cares. It seems like he's always cared about Grogu. I mean, or cared about the science, and was a good person. So
I think that's one thing that this show does very well. I keep saying that, but it's another thing that this show does very well is that it makes these very three-dimensional characters. So, you know, when you first meet him, he's just the scientist working with the Empire. And then you sort of get to see his whole story and get to understand him as a person. And, you know, not that it necessarily justifies his actions, but you can understand how he came to, you know, commit the actions. And I feel like that's something that some aspects of, say, the sequels were lacking, in the sense that, like, so for example, Kylo Ren, I feel like they could have done a better job of having us understand how the child of Han and Leia would come to be that person. And I didn't feel like it was well-rounded enough that by the end I understood how that happened or how that came to be. Whereas in The Mandalorian, I can easily completely understand and almost empathize with how these characters came to be in that situation, even though I don't agree with their actions, which is really good storytelling.
Yeah, I love the way you put that, because I'm trying to find the words to describe, to get to Dr. Pershing and who he is and the heart of what they showed us in this episode, because he talks about his mother, he talks about the cloning technology, his motivations behind all of it. And you're like, okay, there's some good stuff here. And as we watch and we think back to like the Clone Wars, which is awesome, it's a great idea to continue with this whole cloning thing, because they went ahead and did it in the sequels. And, you know, think what you will or want of all of that. I know there's mixed reactions on that. But they doubled down on cloning and they said, no, we're going to bring cloning in as an aspect of this. And like Grogu, they were trying to take a sample from Grogu. Are you kidding me? But then it's like, okay, Dr. Pershing, when he explains himself, you're like, that's not that bad. He's not going to harm the child. He just wants this sample. And, you know, it's a little, I don't know, the ethics, as he said, the ethics of cloning are a little bit, they're tough. They're complicated. Right. But yeah. But it was great. They got to the heart of who he is. Yeah.
And it's his life work, you know, like something he's been working on his entire career. And he truly just he's talking about a breakthrough, and he truly just wants to continue with his work. And he, even though it causes him to go into a conflict, like we see that he has the moral compass, but his work is so important to him. It's hard when your own desires and your own, you know, your dreams conflict with your moral compass, and we totally see that in him. And it's not just like, oh yeah, let's do this.
Yeah, he's conflicted, he's trying to figure it out. Yeah. He even at one point even says, he's like, we have to do what's best for the New Republic at all costs, right? And he's like, okay, I'm gonna go. And the droid across from him is like, yes, that's the agenda. And he's like, okay, green light, and we're gonna go get that lab and do our thing. So because he probably could have done great things for the New, like undercover and like develop stuff and say, hey, check this out, this is really good for you guys. And his motivations were in the right spot, and she took him out. Now, last thing, as we close up shop here, I want to get to back to the end of this episode really quickly. What in the world did we all realize or think that Bo-Katan had been baptized in those waters as well? No, I did not think about that. I was like, oh, as she's walking in, I'm like, she's redeemed. Like, what did you think of that, Michaela? Like just the fact that she first of all, the Mythosaur was really cool, and she like talks to Din about that. But then they're going out, and he's going to a place where there's friends, you'll be welcomed, it's okay. It's a little hostile, because if you don't follow the way, you're an apostate, you're not a true Mandalorian. I mean, they're not gonna like kill you or anything, but you're just not allowed to be one of them. You're an outcast. But how did you feel about her coming in and getting the thumbs up from the group, I guess?
Yeah, I think that was really interesting to see, just for Bo-Katan's character, because like we said before, she's sees them, she's like, oh, they're a cult, they're like outsiders, they're not real Mandalorians. But they sort of give her everything that she's been longing for, even if she doesn't realize it, right? She wants that sense of collectiveness with the other Mandalorians. I think she wants to be redeemed. I don't, even if she doesn't realize that, I think she feels like she's failed twice with the Darksaber. She's failed twice at reuniting Mandalore. And I think having, you know, someone tell her that she's been redeemed is something that she has wanted. I think she wants to be redeemed in the eyes of the Mandalorians. So that was really interesting to see, and, you know, interesting coming from this group of people who she doesn't really hadn't really respected as being real Mandalorians.
Yeah. Okay. So with that, let's talk about real quickly, just some predictions going for it almost feels like in this series, it's impossible to like make predictions. We just did the Dr. Pershing talk real quickly about where that could go, but that's super far out there. That's probably not like the next chapter. I will be blown away if they do something with that. But I feel like Bo-Katan going forward is probably going to stay with this group. Like Michaela is saying, it feels like, okay, this is the things that I want, and I feel okay here. I'm comfortable. Mm-hmm. They've welcomed me here. Before I go into the predictions, though, Michaela, have you heard the theory about it's totally debunked now, I feel like, but the theory is that the armorer, everyone wonders who the armorer is. There's a theory that is Bo-Katan's sister, like the third Kree's sister.
I have not heard that theory. That's really interesting.
It's floating around the internet, and it's because Satine, who was Obi-Wan's lover and ruler of Mandalore, had a nephew named Corky Kreese, and Corky's mother is not Bo-Katan.
Right.
And so who is his mother or father? Like, who is the other Kree? Who's the other member of their family, the third sister that is not there? And no one's seen the armorer's face, and people are kind of thinking, like, is that is this why she chose the ancient way of Mandalore? Did she feel like her sisters abandoned that way, and then her son Corky Kreese died? Because no one knows whether he's in the Clone Wars for like three arcs. Ahsoka goes there and meets him, and it's this whole kind of thing.
Okay.
Some people have joked that it's Obi-Wan's child, that maybe Obi-Wan and Satine had a child, and it's just her nephew. I like that theory. Absolutely. We have no clue. So it's just kind of a fascinating thing. So anyways, one to mention that in case you hadn't heard it. I think now her being there and meeting the armorer was sort of like, because the armorer knew beforehand, she was like, I know who that is. And she's from the royal house of, you know, Clan Kreese. And she knew her, but the Bo-Katan has yet to recognize the armorer. There's no discussion or exchange of name there. And the armorer is the leader. She is leading them big time. So anyway, as we move forward, though, what do you think is going to happen, Michaela? I'm putting you on the spot here, okay? On the spot. What do you think is going to happen between Bo-Katan's old faction and this new faction that she's with? Do you think they're going to go back and, like, reclaim Mandalore? Or do you think they're going to strike out and try to, like, fight that Mandalorian group? Or is there going to be a Mandalorian civil war? What do you think is going to go forward with the Mandalorians?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think there has to be some sort of infighting before they come together collectively at the end. Yeah. Just for narrative purposes, I think they're going to have to fight first. And I think the end of that episode sort of lulled us into this false sense of security where Bo-Katan has, you know, been accepted into that clan and she's sort of come to respect them. And I think that sort of lulls us into the sense of, oh, they're all going to get along and work together. But I can't imagine Bo-Katan living happily among those group of people for a long time. I don't think she can do it. I think it would be interesting to see, you know, a Mandalorian civil war. But who knows? Like I said, Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau always surprise me. So I'm excited to see where they take it.
me as well. I think it's going to be interesting. So Lottie, what do you think? Do you think we're going to see anything I'm just thinking about how, like, you're with your Star Wars, your limited experience in Star Wars, like, where does it seem like from a storytelling point of view that they would want to go with this? I mean, you have this weird thing with Coruscant here, right? Dr. Pershing, how does it all fit in? And then you've got this other story with Din Djarin and Grogu, and he's now with this group. Is the next one just, here's your house and here's where you stay, it's this little mud hut that you're gonna stay in and we're all gonna stay around here? And
I have a feeling that definitely, like, Bo-Katan's experience with this group is very important going forward. You know, we always talked about the knowledge that I have of the Mandalorians stems mostly from Rebels and Sabine and seeing Bo-Katan in there.
Yeah.
So we feel like she's always been kind of that leader at heart. but struggled with it. Struggled with the whole black lightsaber or dark saber story, and not really. It's never been given really to her. Mm-hmm. And Sabine had a similar struggle, right? She didn't really want to be a ruler. So it's like almost the other way around. She didn't want to be, but it was given to her. Bo-Katan feels like she would be a great ruler.
Is from the ruling family.
From the family, actually. She struggles with the saber. And we saw even, she was the one, those who had a better grip on the saber when she was fighting with it.
Oh, yeah.
Than Din. So there's definitely something. And I also agree with Michaela. I don't see her. I think she's going to walk her own way. I think, you know, she's not going to stay with that group forever and become part of their.
Wait, are you saying that like at some point she's going to turn to the group and say, no, this is the way. And follow me. Like,
take her helmet off and take it all off. And
oh, like, my gosh.
No. Well. Yeah, but definitely this is an important part of her journey. To learn more about them, to learn as much as she can about different Mandalorians to, in the end, be able to unite them.
Good point. Yeah, that she would need to go learn about this group as well.
Yeah.
Because they are pretty, like, I mean, maybe, like, if the armor, hopefully, I don't know. We don't know anything about the armor. Like, if the armor dies, like, maybe they need a new leader. And, like, it's less, I don't know, it's less... I don't know. The ancient way is the ancient way. Maybe there's a way in between where we can take our helmets off, but we do everything else. Like, I don't know. I just feel like there's an in between, and maybe she'll find it. But I'm with both of you guys. I think it's going to be, it's all about Bo-Katan, her leadership, and Din Djarin, armor. You got all three of them now there together. And this whole other faction that is out there that were once Bo-Katan's followers that have like ships and are doing stuff. And oh, an interesting point to keep in mind, the Imperials came in and they're after Bo-Katan. A lot of them. Because of the Moff Gideon stuff, which shows you they're angry about that. And there is still a working group supporting Moff Gideon. And they know about this. And they send a strike force to take her out. Yeah. I forgot about that. That's kind of a big deal. So,
real quick, does Bo-Katan have any family left? Her sister?
So that's what I was kind of going over. I don't think so. I don't think that, like, you mean it like her close family.
Not that we know of, at least.
I don't think so. Unless her nephew Corky is actually alive.
Right.
And that, I can't believe that's his name, but I mean, that is, oh, Corky Kreese. That's our guy.
Corky.
Yeah. Right. So yeah, who knows? But anyway, yeah. I'm excited to see where it's going to go. I think nobody has any clue, and it's just going to be it's going to be fascinating. One more final thing. Did you see when the armor poured the living waters of Mandalore into the thing, and it kind of did like a little glow? Come on. There is something to the ancient way. That's what I'm starting to realize, though, is like the armor is onto something, and they actually might be into some mystical, like mythic, like, because Bo is sort of like, there is a Mythosaur. There actually was one down there below.
True.
And all these old legends and rumors and stories are becoming true. So it is fantastic. So we shall see. Michaela, final thoughts. We'll give you the final word. Just in general, how is your Mandalorian, like this experience, first three episodes, just anything, how are you feeling? Are you excited? Are you hopeful? Has it been a good ride so far?
I have been very happy with season three so far. I was at first feeling slightly skeptical just because I didn't like how they sort of resolved the ending of season two very quickly in Book of Boba Fett. Like, Grogu goes away. Okay, you know, half a season later, he's back. I thought that was going to be a bigger plot of season three. But two things about that is that I do think that that's not the end of that plot with Luke. I think that Jon Favreau is going, and Dave Filoni are going to do something with that. And I also feel like the fact that he resolved that so fast before the start of season three makes me very hopeful that he has a much bigger plan for season three. And he's like, no, we got to get that out of the way before season three. We don't have time. There's a lot more going on. I'm very excited to see see where it goes.
Yeah, that's a good point. We got to get him back here. And because I've thought of something, I think I know where, like, how this is going to stretch. And because, you know, once the writing fever takes over and you really start to say, okay, now we're getting the funds and they're saying Ahsoka series, they're saying this series, they're saying these things are coming together. He's like, boy, oh boy, we got to get this together. We need old Grogu back in here. Like, let's go. We don't have time to do that. Like other arc. And it's just, it is cool. It's exciting because you can kind of feel the energy that they have in these shows. And it's just like, I cannot wait for more of it. But all right. Well, hey, that was fun. Just wanted to kind of dive in there. And we are so happy that we had Michaela on because she is just fantastic. Lottie and I came across her, all of her TikTok, her Instagram, YouTube content. All the links are down below. Friends, go check her out though. Like, you do like skits. I mean, can you tell folks just a little bit about sort of what you do? Like, you kind of bring to life, for us anyways, like a lot of what you do was bring to life the, like the scenes from Harry Potter that weren't really in the movies. So I mean, that was fantastic, genius start. So yeah, just tell us a little bit about, you know, what you do.
First of all, thank you. You guys are so nice. But yeah, so most of my content is like comedy skits, is doing like, Ezra said, I like doing book scenes that weren't in the movie or comparing book characters to movie characters. So yeah, I like making people laugh. I think that's most of what I like doing with my content. And I love fandom, so those two things together.
Let me say too, I always like to give a little plug for the most recent things that I just saw. And Lottie and I were just talking about Twilight the other day, and I literally was at Barnes & Noble and I pulled off that, like, she had a new book. It was a Twilight book where she did like a reverse and gender of the characters. And I was like talking to Lottie about it. And then lo and behold, Michaela does the whole like Midnight Sun, Edward's thoughts, as well as like Bella's thoughts. And you play a great Edward, by the way. It was fantastic. So stuff like that. So yeah, all the fandoms, you got tons of fandoms represented there. And you have tons of partnerships and really cool things. You did a lightsaber giveaway. By the way, you inspired my wife to give me a lightsaber, the same lightsaber that you have. And I, like, love it. It is so much fun. So, yeah, just really cool. And your content is just amazing. So, and congrats to over 100K. You are, like, just blowing.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, my gosh. Thank you.
Yeah, it is. It's really wild. And I love all of your stuff. Do you ever go live over there on Instagram? Or TikTok, or one of the two?
I do. I think I've been live on Instagram once. I can't do lives. All of my content is so planned and scripted. Yeah. Like, I did theater as a kid, so I need a script, you know? Yeah. I need rehearsal. I need to know what I'm doing. Maybe you can tell from the podcast we've done, I'm not good at speaking just like off the top of my head. I feel like the words don't go from my brain to my mouth very well.
Totally. Okay. I hate to be like this, but
actually
the teacher in me is coming out, and I want to tell you right now, young lady, that your public speaking is very good. You articulate yourself very well. And I think if people go back and it is actually really difficult to do that though. You know, like just to be on the spot and say, and here, as you were saying that, I was going to make a joke, and it was kind of a serious joke, which is like, I feel terrible for not having a better outline or more of like, here we go, Michaela, this is what we're doing. Cause you're like script, script, script. And I'm like, oh shoot, I just kind of said we wing it. And it is really hard. But you do great. See, I think that, that might be what we call like a limiting mindset. I think people would love a Michaela going live, chatting, answering questions and stuff. I think you did do a Q&A, didn't you, at one point? Or that was just sort of, people were sending in questions and stuff.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But thank you. That's really nice. That's really nice of you to say.
Yeah. Okay. I'm out here advocating for the people, you know. I'm their force. I'm there like they're wanting that Michaela live, and pressure on.
Real quick, like I also got to say, and I say this because I know what it feels like from both perspectives, because I often struggle with, oh my gosh, I'm just looking for that one particular word as a non-native speaker sometimes, and I'm like, I feel like I sound so all over the place. But then I want to just tell you that I thought the whole time, like, oh my gosh, she can put it so well into words, her thoughts and all, how it ties in together, and how, I don't know. That's sometimes we need that feedback from others because that's, you know, we perceive ourselves, we are our worst critics often. And like, we perceive ourselves sometimes like, oh my gosh, what did I just say? Or, but actually it's the opposite for everyone else who just listened to you. And it was like, wow, this was awesome. This is exactly what I thought. Yeah. So yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I gotta come back here more often so you guys can hype me up and make me.
Michaela, I will next time you come on, just bring, instead of wearing Grogu, do you like, see if you get like a C-3PO thing or whatever, and I'll be an Ewok. I'm like, oh, like, we'll play the whole thing. We'll get her going. Like, oh my god. Oh, all right, okay.
C-3PO. That was so funny. Yes. Actually.
Okay. Friends. Hey, thank you guys so much for listening. Michaela, what are your handles? Where can folks kind of find you on the internet there?
So on YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram, I am at Magic by Michaela. Michaela is, I'm going to spell it because it's spelled weird. It's M-I-K-A-I-L-A.
Perfect. Yes. And I'm going to leave links down below so you guys can go check out all of that. And it is wonderful content. It does make us laugh. Oftentimes we are like going to sleep scrolling and it's just like, boom, there's Michaela. And we watch and we're laughing and it's fun. So you guys should too. And if you do, let us know. Send us a message. Send her a message. Follow her. All that good stuff, because it is really just good, wholesome, fun content. So friends, with that, again, thanks, Michaela. We appreciate you. We're going to have you back on at some point. Maybe Luke shows up. There's some grand finale, some craziness we need to talk about. So we'll always be reaching out to you, and this, it's fun. It's fun chatting with you.
Thank you guys for having me. That was so much fun.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right. And thanks everyone for listening. We will be back with more. And as always, friends, may the force be with you.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.